Welcome, everybody, to Asian Persuasion. Just to start off, we're going to be each introducing ourselves and then explaining the reason why we believe ethnic studies is important. So to begin, my name is Audrey, and my pronouns are she, her, and hers. I'm Chinese American, and I'm from Huntington Beach, Orange County, and I believe that ethnic studies is important in understanding the history and obstacles that various groups of people face in America.
Hi, my name's Amei. My pronouns are he, him, and his. My ethnicity is South Asian American, Indian American, and I am living in Irvine right now.
Hi, everybody. My name is Caitlin. My pronouns are she, her, hers. My ethnicity is Mexican, Ecuadorian American. And I'm from Northridge, California. I think ethnic studies is important because it really gives an insight on what a lot of different ethnicities go through, and it really makes you think and understand just other people and their cultures and their beliefs. And I think it's really important for all of us to have a better understanding of people around us.
Hey guys, so my name is Enzo Alicio, and my pronouns are he, him. My ethnicity would be Hispanic, so more specifically Peruvian, and I'm located in Whittier, California. So ethnic studies is really important because it really gives students a new perspective on what the mistakes were and how not to repeat the kind of like the errors of the past, so as to pave a better future for the following generations.
Hello, my name is Steven Tran. My pronouns are he, him, and they. I am Chinese American, and I'm from Roland Heights, California. Why I think course is important in general? I think ethnic studies is important in general because we've made many mistakes that have been recorded down in history. And people always say people who fail history are doomed to repeat it. So I think we need to actually learn from our mistakes in the past, so that we don't actually make those mistakes in the future and it can actually progress as a human race. Oh yeah, we would be doing this in person, but COVID hit. Yeah. Speaking of COVID, how you guys doing? Are you guys doing all right?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I mean, I'm all right. I have, unfortunately, I do have a few friends who have tested positive for COVID, so they're staying in isolation right now.
Oh, no, mm-hmm. I hope they're doing all right.
I hope they're doing all right.
So, too. What about you guys?
I mean, I'm doing...
My bad.
No, I'm doing, like, as great as it can be, you know, powering through, like, midterms and all of that. How are you guys doing?
All right, cool, yeah. So, Enzo, how are you doing
as far as... I've been good. This person I know, his father actually just passed from COVID rather recently. It's been really hard. I've been to help them the best I can, but like I was never really close to him or the family, but yeah, it's rough for sure.
A hard time for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So sad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we just need to keep like social distancing and like definitely wearing the face masks, I think. Yeah.
Definitely. How long do you think?
Oh, go ahead.
No, just like definitely taking those precautions and those measurements to stay safe, especially.
Exactly. How long do you think this is all going to keep going on? Like, until the vaccine, or do you think, like, way after the vaccine is
I think,
everywhere?
Like, a year after the vaccine, probably.
It's definitely going to be after the vaccine, though I'm not sure whether it's going to be a few months or an entire year.
I don't think things are going to go back entirely the same. Like, all right, everyone, no mask. Like, everyone, full capacity. Like,
yeah, not for a while, especially.
I mean, Asian countries have already, like, been through this before, so I guess their culture is already prepped for this kind of thing.
Yeah, I've heard that a lot of, like, countries, especially Asian countries, they basically return to, like, normal.
Like, what
it's
do you
only,
guys...
Like, yeah, I think
that... I was gonna say, what do you guys think are some, like, negative effects COVID has had on people viewed as Asian Americans?
I mean, I would definitely say ever since the pandemic has started, there's definitely been an increase in violence and like discrimination and like xenophobia towards like Chinese people, whether they be like Chinese American or even just Chinese from the mainland, and just towards like Asians in general.
Yeah. Especially with the president calling it the Kung Fu flu and Chinese virus and stuff like that. Doesn't help. Yeah.
I would definitely say, because he used that kind of language to describe the virus, I would definitely say it had like xenophobic undertones and probably had a contribution to the rise in discrimination towards Asian Americans. And I've seen there's been like on the news as well, there's been like so many incidents towards like, I guess like specifically Asian, like elderly Asians, just getting like physically attacked.
Like when they're harassed on the subway or like they're just going about their lives and people are shouting profanities at them. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Like all these microaggressions are super counterproductive, right? Like during a pandemic, we're supposed to come together and fight it as a unified group.
Right. Exactly. It's almost like a pandemic of like racial discrimination as well as like a viral or bacterial pandemic.
Yeah.
Yes.
So if I might say something, I feel like racism towards Asian Americans has always existed. It's just compared to a lot of the other minorities, it's just not as obvious. Mm-hmm. It's only being brought out because the president said like things.
I would definitely agree. With the pandemic this year, there's been a very evident rise in xenophobia and discrimination toward not only like Chinese Americans, but Asian Americans overall. And if you look to the history of America, there's been xenophobia that has been present in our country, especially with the Chinese Exclusion Act, which wasn't even a century ago. And as well as like the discrimination of Chinese workers while they were in the United States helping build the Transcontinental Railroad.
Yeah. So Donald Trump has, for like the length of time that we've known him or known about him, he's no stranger to making xenophobic remarks and just ignorant remarks in general. I think it's like particularly interesting in the fact that people see Asian Americans as kind of like the bringers of COVID and they kind of like use them as a scapegoat. Well, Trump uses them as a scapegoat rather than admitting that he should have done things quicker or like put the country on lockdown sooner, or maybe like November of 2019 when he found out about COVID-19. He's using Asian Americans as a scapegoat and he refers to the virus as like the Wuhan flu or things like that. Asian men and or Asian American men and women also face a lot of stereotypes that people aren't really aware of. This is evident through how media portrays Asian Americans in general as a whole. There's a lot of people who fetishize Asian women, especially through like K-pop, and also Asian men. In America, there's a push towards like masculinity, and that's hence the term toxic masculinity. That term kind of refers to this need for, or how some men feel the need to kind of overpower or be overly assertive over other people. So kind of the opposite is taking place when Asian men in general are kind of feminized and their beauty standards kind of take more of like a female perception in the way they express themselves.
Well, like I didn't know that there was it for men as well. I know definitely for women, but I didn't know it was like that for men as well.
Or it's for men, it's a desexualization, right?
Yeah. So like
I mean, it could also be fetishization if you've not seen K-pop Twitter.
That's true. Yeah, I have definitely seen K-pop Twitter.
I feel like people portray them as very feminine, like with makeup, like really like pale makeup, and like eye makeup.
I think someone talks about that, right? Someone about makeup.
Yeah, there's like actually a really heavy. I think if you compare like the faces of boys in K-pop bands to like makeup videos on YouTube, they're actually very very similar.
Yeah.
And I'm probably gonna get hate for that.
No, I mean.
They portray themselves very feminine, like, which is the like really popular one right now.
BTS, EXO.
Perform on like Blackpink awards.
Well, Blackpink is more of a female K-pop band. I think this topic is supposed to be for more predominantly male bands.
But like, why does that happen? I have no experience with it, right? So is it like a cultural reason that like
for why they present themselves like more femininely?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I think it's more of like a cultural thing, I would say.
I think it's a cultural thing. I'm not sure about Korean culture, but in Chinese culture, there's always been this kind of belief that like paler, whiter skin is just more beautiful because we're more pure.
I would say that's like a thing overall in Asian culture. Like, I think a lot of times, like, especially you hear like older Asian generations be like, oh, it's better like if your skin is paler.
Yeah.
And there's like a lot of Asian countries that use bleaching products like for their skin so they can get, you know, like a lighter skin tone because it's seen as more beautiful and stuff like that.
Yeah, I can vouch for that in Indian culture, at least. Like, I think a soap company or something like that, or shampoo company, was recently, like, criticized or something for saying that, oh, our soap will make your skin whiter.
Oh, really?
Like, stuff like that, you know? So that, putting the whiteness as the top level of, like, in the hierarchy of skin color, you know, is really progressive.
I mean, like, I think it's, like, I guess, like, unfortunate that they promote those type of skin products because it's, like, I feel like people, it makes people feel, like, ashamed about their skin tone when they shouldn't be. But, like, I know I was, like, talking to my parents about this because, like, I think when I was younger, I didn't really understand, like, why paler skin was seen as more beautiful because I'm someone that gets, like, tan pretty easily. Mm-hmm. And my mom was just, like, explaining to me how, I guess, like, in Chinese culture, like, Asian culture, it's just, like, if you have paler skin, they would recognize you as someone who's wealthier because you have the ability to just like stay inside and like if you work outside all day, then that's how you get, you know, tan and stuff like that. But what you were saying,
Hispanic culture too though, because Ecuador, my family is like very like they could pass as white and they're upper class and they have maids and chefs and all this stuff and they're all like darker skin and like you can just tell like the way they dress, the way they talk, the way they carry themselves, like people respect you and have kind of like a Miss like every time they say your name. If you don't like say that towards them, they like they're like, oh, I'm so sorry, like they apologize instantly, like they think something's gonna happen. And it's sad. I didn't realize that until I visited.
I relate to that as well because my family's from Peru. And the only Peruvians that really come to America are the ones from the capital, because that's the only place really that they have money in the whole country. So I relate to your story about Ecuador because my family also has like the maids and the cooks and all that. And it's just like that disparity is so prevalent everywhere, I think, in Latin America and the rest of the world for that matter.
Yeah, so it's quite a universal thing, I guess.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah.
The point that you brought up about like being from the capital city and thus having money to come over, it's very similar to something I was reading about the model minority myth, right? A lot of people from, for instance, East Asia who come over, they are stereotyped as being super smart or whatever, right? But a lot of the reason is that they were the ones who could make enough money to get out of or to leave their family and come to the United States. So it's like selective immigration, right? Where it's
That makes sense.
I mean, I would say that's definitely true. I mean, like, if you look at a lot of international students that, I guess, like, who come to UC Riverside to study, like, a lot of them come from really wealthy families, or they just studied really, really hard and were able to get, like, some type of academic scholarship to study overseas. I'm Chinese, but my family grew up in Thailand, and I have a lot of family that's still in Thailand. Like, my dad, he didn't really come from, like, a wealthy family, but my uncle, he studied super hard, and he was able to get, like, an academic scholarship, and he was funded by like the Thai government to come study in America, and he was able to get a degree like in Vanderbilt, so it's pretty cool.
That is awesome.
Just because I am not Asian American, and I guess I do understand the whole model minority, just because I feel like sometimes personally I feel like a lot of people have a lot of comments racially about Asian Americans, like about appearance. They never really talk about like work ethic and stuff like that. They always consider them like very smart or like, I don't know, any like personal stereotypes that have been placed, because obviously I'm not Asian American. Like, can you describe the model minority a little bit?
I would say when it comes to the model minority myth, well, I mean, like as an Asian American, like I definitely feel like people would like box me into the model minority myth growing up, but I think it's just basically establishing Asian Americans as being more submissive and not being as like vocal, but there are also like a lot of other stereotypes surrounding it. So I would say homogenizes Asian Americans, but like I feel like a lot of people don't realize that Asian, like being Asian, there are so many different ethnic groups within Asia. Like there are so many. It's not just East Asia. And I feel like a lot of times when people think of Asian, they kind of just picture like an East Asian person.
Yeah, and it invisibilizes a lot of other Asian groups that do live in the U.S. and do have an impact on the social fabric of America. Especially the model minority myth, it was born at a time when most of the Asian population in America was East Asian, right? Mm-hmm. So the more recent influxes of South Asians and Southeast Asian really isn't represented in that, even though they are, you know, an integral part of America as well. So it just doesn't account for that diversity of Asian immigration that we see today.
Exactly. I feel like the model minority myth definitely doesn't recognize, or like, it's not fully inclusive of other Asian ethnic groups in America.
Something that I was like thinking about was, I feel like a lot of what the model minority is that, like you mentioned, they're submissive. But I feel like it's not necessarily that they're submissive. I feel like it's more of a respect thing, a cultural thing. Like, at least from what I understand from like my Asian American friends, like they say, like they're taught to like just treat everyone with respect. And like, I feel like when someone's like coming at you and disrespecting you, I feel like they don't go to that level of disrespect. They just like take it. Like the way I see it is like they're strong. Like they're like, I'm not gonna go down to your level and like talk back. Versus like people will think of it as submissive. Like, oh, they're not fighting.
Yeah, for sure.
Your words, like you're saying it to me, and you look bad. Versus like me, who's just living my life here. You know what I mean?
For sure. I would agree. I would say in Asian cultures, yeah, it's definitely more of a respect thing. But I think like in the Western world, they kind of perceive it as submissiveness. Just because like I think respect in Asian cultures is a super big thing, like respecting other people and especially respecting your elders and never really like talking back against someone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the readings from this week or week 6 pointed that out. It was a U.S. News and World Report model minority article, and it was saying that it was stereotyping, really, the fact that Asian Americans come to the United States with these ingrained family values of respect for elders and other things too, like a focus on education and deterrence from crime, I guess you would say. And that is really part of the model minority myth, where it's just pigeonholing a whole group of people into just a few characteristics.
Mm-hmm. What you said about education and working hard, I think that's definitely also part of the model minority myth, because a lot of people, when they think of like Asians, they stereotype them as being smart or intelligent. And I've definitely gotten that a lot. Like when I was younger in school, like people would be like, oh, shouldn't you know this? Because like you're Asian, like you should be smart. Yeah, but I think it's because like the model minority myth has, it also includes that stereotype, but I think it's because for a lot of Asians emphasize education in their culture. And for a lot of them, they're like, the only way you can achieve like economic and social mobility is by, you know, working hard and getting a degree and mm-hmm. getting like your education completed so you can have a stable job.
And I think that's in a large part is a reaction to existing institutionalized biases in American culture, where mm-hmm. education is really the best way to get ahead, right? Because so many other paths for immigrants to succeed, not only Asian Americans, but immigrants in general to succeed, are so walled off between in terms of race and language and things like that, that it's seen that education is really only the last resort to finding success mm-hmm. in this country.
Exactly. Like, I think that's why a lot of times there's that stereotype where it's like, you know, Asian parents, they want their children to go into STEM and become like, or become a doctor or become a lawyer, because like those type of fields are highly respected and you have to have a higher education to be able to work in that field. And I feel like a lot of people view those job fields as more stable, especially financially.
Oh, I'm definitely guilty of that.
Yeah, like the whole tiger mom concept, right? Where it's like,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Always pushing for higher grades. Always pushing for like, oh yeah, you should be doing more work, doing more things, stand out from the crowd.
Yeah, and that.
Oh, I was just gonna say, like, I feel like that's a very big Asian stereotype, but I feel like it's also every ethnic group has like their kind of version of tiger mom. Because like I know from personal experience, like when my friend from her parents were from Nigeria, my grandparents were from Mexico, like, and I kind of noticed this at a young age, immigrants really want better for their children. And they all realize that it's just education. Like, that's what it really just comes down to. I feel like they really like engrave it and you have to get an A. Like, as they realize like what it takes when you don't have that A behind you, you know what I mean? Like, if they don't have the education, they see what it's like, the way the world treats you if you're not educated like that. And I feel like they want better for their kids. I feel like I have this a different perspective because I respect immigrants and I respect the fact that they have to work so hard and they're yet still like down and like they still keep working. So I feel like I just have like this total opposite view of like most other, like maybe I would just say like Americans in general. Like you can see it as a bad thing or a good thing, but like I feel like it's just parents wanting what's best for their kids. So then it becomes a stereotype. And I think that it's also kind of hard for, correct me if I'm wrong, it's hard for like if you're Asian, if like you're not really into school, because it's like you have this stereotype of you have to be smart. Like you said, oh, you're Asian, you should know that. Like just because I'm Asian doesn't mean I have to know anything.
Definitely.
It's like a whole like huge thing to live up to, but it's like not everyone's the same. Not everyone loves the same things or wants to learn the same things.
Yeah.
So I feel like that just sets this whole like almost like everyone has to meet this expectation, but like everyone's different.
That's such a good point. I mean, like, definitely a part of people viewing East Asians as intelligent. I think a lot of times they think that, you know, Asian students, they excel in STEM, like science and math. And like, personally, as like an Asian person, like math was probably my worst subject in school. And I like felt ashamed because it's like that stereotype of me. It's like I should be good at math because I'm Asian, but it was my worst subject. And I actually excelled in English, but I just had to work like so much harder to excel in math because I feel like a lot of other people, they expected me to be good at it because I am Asian.
In my psych class, we were discussing immigrant psychology and stuff like that, and we discussed how stereotypes like that really do cause people to have depression, anxiety, suicidal thoughts of not living up to expectations, and it's like this whole thing of stress that their parents are going to get upset. Like, it's just like a bunch of stuff that like weighs on people. And like a simple comment like that, like, oh, you're Asian, you should know that, can actually impact somebody more than like people realize. Like, it can already be an insecurity, like you said. Like, if I were to say that if I was in your class, like, oh, you should know math, like, you're Asian, like, you're already struggling with it personally, but to have someone then put it in your face again.
Right. I feel like another issue with that is, like, that expectation. And then also, like a lot of people who kind of believe in the model minority myth don't really see it as, like, a negative thing because it, you know, like, intelligence is regarded as, like, a compliment or a good thing to have. So, like, when people hold Asian Americans to that high standard, they don't really realize that they're causing harm to the community. It's not as blatant of a disrespectful stereotype as others, such as, like, the driving one, you know. Or, like, just things that are, like, blatantly degrading.
Yeah, that's such a good point. I mean, I feel like in all those instances when I was younger and people said it to my face, I don't think they meant it. Or I don't think they were aware that it was, like, kind of harmful towards me. I think they kind of thought, like, oh, it's kind of like a compliment. Because, yeah, like, intelligence is such a good thing, you know? And being smart, that's, like, a good thing. But, yeah, I feel like they didn't understand that it was kind of, like, hurtful in a way. But, like, another thing with the model minority myth is that I think a lot of times I would say white Americans use it as a way to pit minorities against each other, especially between like Asian Americans and other racial minority groups in America. And a lot of times it's because they're like, you know, maybe look at, you know, Asian American group, like they worked really hard. And I think there's like this kind of perceived idea that Asian Americans are overall well off economically. And I feel like that's definitely not true for a lot of different Asian ethnic groups.
Yeah, it really detracts from other groups. And most notably, from what I've read, is against Black Americans. We were reading this article titled Cold War Origins of the Model Minority Myth by Robert G. Lee. And in it, he states that there's this incorrect notion that Black Americans and Asian Americans start from the same point as far as like history as a minority in America. And those two groups have different socioeconomic outcomes. And since there's the same starting point and different outcomes, they would say that there's a difference originating from the race, which is completely incorrect. Lyndon B. Johnson says in something he wrote that you can't take a person or a group from years and years and, you know, centuries, really, of constantly denigrating them as American society has done to Black people in this country and expect them to succeed in an instant. And I found that very, very compelling as far as how racially divisive the model minority myth is.
Exactly. And I feel like, especially when it comes to immigration, like people need to recognize that you know, different ethnic and racial groups, their immigration story has been completely different. Like, for a lot of Black Americans, like, their ancestors didn't come here by choice. They came here because of the slave trade. And that definitely had, like, a super large impact today on how they're succeeding as a group in America. And then when it comes to, like, Asian Americans, like, a lot of them came here on, like, employment-based immigration. And a lot of them came here with already, like, an educational background. The stories are very, very different from one another. So it's obviously their level of success and how they're working together, like, in America, it's different because, like, they came here for different reasons and
right.
by different means and all of that.
I also think that since, as you said, Black Americans have originated in America from the slave trade and Asian Americans actually come here on an employment basis,
mm-hmm.
I think that Black Americans and Asian Americans don't actually start from the same starting point.
Yeah.
And all they do is, I think all of white America just looks at is where they are now and judges minorities based on that.
Right.
So they look at Asian Americans and say, oh yeah, they're at a better economic, social class than Black Americans. And so therefore mm-hmm. they are better and what Black Americans should strive to surpass them rather than like be equal to the whites.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of damaging and distracting minorities from the actual problem here in the U.S.
I mean, you made so many good points, but I would say for older generation Asian Americans, especially like, you know, like parents and grandparents and stuff like that who immigrated here, I feel like a lot of them bought into the model minority myth and what like white Americans and white politicians were saying about them. And I think that's why there's so much tension and discrimination between Asian Americans and Black Americans, because I feel like there's a lot of times like there's an air of superiority that Asian Americans have over Black Americans. And that's definitely like, yeah, damaging and unhealthy and discriminatory in so many ways. But I think even Asian Americans themselves have to recognize that, yeah, not everyone started at the same point in America.
Yeah, that's a very good point. In a lot of ways, what you guys are describing, it sounds like victim blaming, like on part from, you said, the Asian American community and the white community, and then also like other minority groups who really blame the Black community for where they are now. You know, like they're like hammering the nail on them when they never even were given any opportunities to begin with.
Exactly. And like even today, Black Americans are very heavily discriminated against and oppressed on an institutional level. And I mean, it all comes down to, I guess, like, you know, policymaking and stuff like that. But if you look at, I guess, like in politics and in the government, most people that are in those positions of power that do make those policies and have those discussions with one another are white men. And white men are very far away from the reality of what most people of color face in America. Because, you know, most of them don't live within those communities or interact with those groups of people. So it's like, I feel like it's unfair for them to make those type of policies and not be able to go in those communities and talk to those people and see how they live and stuff like that.
So I am glad that's changing since recently, especially in this election, the 2020 election, many people pay attention to the presidential side. But what's kind of going unnoticed is that more and more Black Americans and people of color are being elected into House and Senate positions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it's still, you know,
I mean, it's not much. We still have more work to do.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, definitely. And as Audrey was saying, these people don't live within these communities, right? And a lot of Americans really don't realize what it's like to be an immigrant in the United States.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, that's something that I wanted to touch on is that I think they don't really understand what they really go through. And, like, I've given a presentation on what it's like for, like, children coming here. And, like, something that really, like, actually gets the crowd thinking is, like, putting in perspective of, like, you going into a new country, stepping foot into a classroom, and nobody speaking the same language as you. The teaching is in a different language, the writing, and, like, you're just staring at it and you have no idea what's happening. Yet you're expected to make grades, you're expected to keep bringing home A's and all the stuff from your family and eventually support your family because of these good grades. And it's like, how do you expect immigrants to move up in the education system if there's no proper teaching for them? So like something that like I would think of is that like I would probably feel stressed, alone. This is how immigrants feel when they do come to the U.S. And people think, oh, like they have it easy. They're getting government, this, you know, all that kind of stuff. They're taking handouts. But it's like you don't really think about like what they actually truly go through, like as just humans, and how like I read in an article that said that when they go to school, teachers will say, this is an English only school. Like if we hear you speaking in your native language, you'll get detention or we'll make a call home.
Yeah.
It's like,
oh, yeah.
Putting the language down. which is, like, obviously forced assimilation and white supremacy, stating that, like, English is the only language, it's the superior language, even though the U.S. doesn't even have a technical native language.
Yeah, well, like, we don't even have, like, an official language, and I feel like a part of that is because overall, like, we should be celebrating the fact that our country has so many different groups of people that speak so many different languages. I mean, like, rather than seeing English as the superior language, we should encourage students and, like, children to speak in their native tongue and to learn other people's languages and cultures, because, I mean, it only benefits them, especially when it comes to the workforce, like, being able to speak more than one language. And if you travel to another place, it's appreciated that, you know, the people in that country, they probably look at you and be like, oh, wow, like, you took the time to, like, learn about my culture and learn about my language. But just to be clear, were all of you guys, like, born in the U.S.?
Yes.
Yes.
No. Like, were your parents or, like, your grandparents, were they immigrants?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Parents, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, so, like, piggybacking off of, like, what Caitlin said, like, I would assume, since all of us were born here and our parents or grandparents were immigrants, it's like, you know, you look at them and, like, you're so proud of them, because it's like, I mean, like, I can't even imagine my parents, like, coming here and they didn't really speak English, they didn't know anybody, and having to basically start their life all over, that's so scary. They don't really have, like, a support system. And so, like, I'm sure that all of you guys probably feel the same way about your parents. Like, you're super proud and feel, I guess, like, grateful for the opportunity to be able to get an education and have all these, like, opportunities open for you that maybe they necessarily didn't have.
Did somebody say that they weren't born here?
Yeah, I wasn't born here, but I moved here when I was relatively young. But
I see.
Okay. Yeah, even so, what you were saying about not knowing the language is really super stressful, and it doesn't manifest only in language, right? For instance, like, my parents would send me to school with food that they would make at, like, Indian food. And it's super weird as a kid when you're sitting down with a bunch of other Americanized children or American children, and you're eating this weird ethnic food that kind of smells different, kind of looks different, right? And it's not very inclusive sometimes, it feels like.
Yeah.
Wait, did you grow up in Irvine when you moved here?
No, I grew up in Canada.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
Oh, wow.
You've been all over.
Oh, yeah.
So did you go to school at all, like, in Irvine before?
Yeah. Like, I've gone to school in California for most of my life.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. I was just asking because I grew up in Orange County. And, I mean, you guys probably know that Orange County is predominantly white. I grew up in, like, Fountain Valley, Huntington Beach, and those areas are pretty white. And, like, growing up, the makeup of the schools is just mostly, like, Asian and white. But there were, like, instances, like, in elementary school and middle school where it's, like, the Asian kids, they would bring, you know, like what you said, like, they'd be bringing food from home that their parents made, and obviously it's, like, you know, really appetizing, like, Asian dishes, but the other kids, they would say comments like, oh my god, like, why does your food smell so weird, like, why are you eating that, like, why does it look like that? And, like, for me, that made me feel so sad, because, well, personally, I ate, like, hot lunches from school, but I felt so bad for, like, my friends and my peers who are, you know, when you're a kid, you, like, you don't understand, like, what that means when someone says it to you. You're like, why is that person being so mean? And then you realize, you know, it's like, you know, they're making fun of, like, your culture and, like, your food. And I feel like it has such a large impact on you when you're a kid, and you don't realize that until, like, maybe you're a little bit older,
and you start to internalize that kind of conflict of, are you, like, do you really fit in, and you know, are you really American? And you go into the classroom as a kid and they teach you about, like, the Mayflower and how white Americans came over and it was a melting pot and everything's all fine and dandy, but in practice that's so far removed from the truth.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just that dichotomy of what you're taught in schools and that curriculum laid out by majority white people, how that affects us as first-gen immigrants.
Yeah.
Yeah. And going back to what you said, I relate to that. My grandma used to prepare some of my lunches when I was, like, in elementary school. And, like, kids are extremely honest. So, like, if a kid thinks something you're eating or doing is weird, like, they're going to tell you. So, yeah, like, in a lot of days, like, I didn't even bring my lunch to school. Like, I would just pretend to forget it or, like, you know, not eat. Because, like, it was kind of embarrassing eating stuff that looks, like, mushy or, you know, when everyone else is eating, like, pizza and stuff. So
yeah. I mean, I took this class. I think it was, like, World Geo Honors. I don't know if you guys had that class, too. But we had this day where we each had to bring in, like, a dish from, like, one part of the world. It didn't necessarily have to be, like, a dish from our personal culture, just, like, a dish from another part of the world. And then, you know, obviously we brought it all together and we ate it. But it was, like, cool because you got to see, like, the different types of food and, like, different types of cultures. And I feel like definitely at a younger age, we should implement, like, in the education system, like, learning about other cultures and other people and exposing children to different types of people, especially, you know, with, like, an ethnic studies course or something like that. because it makes them, yeah, like more open-minded and more understanding of how like other people live and like where they come from.
And it's really something to be celebrated because everybody's different. Everybody has a different background. Mm-hmm. So there's really no need to assimilate to this white stereotype of how things should be.
Exactly.
I agree. Something that, like, I was, like, still reading in that same article was that, like, when people are told, like, don't speak your native language, like, it really makes you, like, how you guys said about, like, your food, like, it makes you embarrassed and, like, self-conscious and, like, you almost start losing your cultural identity and you try to, like, fit these norms set by, like, American society that, like, this is, like, the way we act, this is what we eat. And like people want to be accepted so badly when they move here that like they literally just lose their identity in the process. And like I believe in schools that there should be teachers that like speak the child's like native language so they could have both. Like, you know, like you come and you speak Chinese or like Mandarin, like you could like have a teacher who's helping you like, oh, like this means cat, and like you can like learn versus just like, okay, this is cat, figure out how to say it. Like, and I have 40 other kids I need to teach, so I can't really set a time like just for you. Mm-hmm. And like people just get lost in the system. Like my dad, he said when he came from Ecuador, like they put him in front of a computer in his like ELL class, and like he was just like pressing buttons like cat, dog, and like in sixth grade, and like he was like, I don't know what like a noun is or a verb or like any of this stuff, because like I remember as a kid I'd come to him and I'm like, I don't know my homework, and he'd be like, I never learned this in school. And I was like, and then in my head I'm like, why didn't you learn this? Like, I'm a kid, I don't realize that like what his schooling was like. I assumed it was like mine. And my mom, she was born here. My dad was born here too, but he went back to Ecuador and then came back again. But my mom, like, she's known all this kind of stuff, and she's like, I may have learned it in school, but when I came home, nobody could help me. Like, I'd ask my mom and she'd be like, I don't know what that says. So it's like even though if you're born here and you have immigrant parents, like, you still don't have that like at home support that like other kids have. Like when they go home, they don't have a person to really ask questions to or anything like that. And then at school, they don't really have it either. So it's like, that's why kids drop out. They're like, I'd rather go work and make money and support my family than sit in a classroom where nobody really cares, or they just lose motivation in general.
Do something I understand and know how to do rather than try to learn something that nobody can help me with.
Exactly. The whole like, I'd rather get paid to do something than just sit here and not get paid and watch my family suffer. And like, just like going back to like how you guys were talking about like your guys' like foods, I do think it's important that like at a young age you show kids like there's no normal, you know, like everyone has their own sense of normal. Your normal is pizza and pasta every night. Their normal is, you know, whatever. Like, I don't know, my normal would probably be like tacos and stuff like that, but like it sounds stereotypical and like it sounds embarrassing to say out loud, like, oh my god, my normal is tacos because I'm Mexican. And it sounds almost embarrassing to say that, but like I shouldn't be embarrassed. Like, I should just be like, yeah, that's my normal, so what, you know, that's what we eat. And so like, exactly. I think that just to, like, people love go to taco trucks or like go get pho and like go get like ethnic food. They can accept like the foods and they want to like go get food, yet they can't accept the people and people's languages, which I think is super crazy.
So I kind of think that in order to appreciate the food, you have to actually learn about the culture and why the food was invented. Like, for example, pho needs noodles, it needs meat, different types of meat, vegetables. But I think people just eat it and think it's delicious, but not exactly recognize why it's good. They just think it's good.
Yeah.
Foods that restaurants in the U.S. make tend to add, like, I don't know, sugars or other sweet stuff to cater to more American tastes rather than cooking in the traditional style of their home countries.
I relate to that so hard. Like, if you go out and eat Indian food, like, it tastes, like, almost sweet at times, right? Like, Indian food is not, like, certain foods, when made in an Indian style, are, like, spicy. They hit hard. And, like, I go to, like, an American restaurant or chain of an Indian food place, and it's, like, really dulled down and super flat and bland to my taste buds as someone who's grown up eating Indian food for the majority of my life. So yeah, I just wanted to say I totally agree with you on that.
Yeah, definitely.
I 100% agree too. Like, I feel like especially when it comes to like ethnic dishes and ethnic food. Like, there's so many people that like to eat it, but they don't even understand that a lot of times the food has been, like, westernized for, like, American people to consume. So, like, what you said about, like, Indian food, and I know, like, when it comes to Chinese food, especially Chinese takeout, I mean, like, I feel like, in general, most Chinese people, they don't eat the dishes that, like, that is offered in Chinese takeout. They eat more, like, actual traditional dishes and, like, you know, like, chow mein, which is actually, you know, like, chow mein. Like, a lot of people don't, I feel like a lot of people don't really eat it. Like, it's not, like, a go-to dish as, like, a Chinese person. Like, there's actually, like, other dishes that would be more, like, something that you would eat.
Yeah, if your entire exposure to Asian food is like Panda Express, for instance, right? That's
let's get clear. I don't think Panda Express is more of a hybrid of American and Asian food rather than like saying it's Asian food in and of itself. I think Panda Express really signifies what Asian American hybrid, like fusion. I wouldn't say fusion. It's just Asian American food is like, especially like, I think one of the most popular examples is the orange chicken at Panda. How many of you guys have eaten the orange chicken at Panda?
I have. I love it.
It's really sweet, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's so sweet. You know what's crazy? I went to a Chinese restaurant maybe like 2 weeks ago, and I was craving orange chicken, and they had it, and I was eating it kind of fast, and it tasted like actual orange. Like, it wasn't like, it was different. And I was like, this is still good, but it was different than what I thought it was going to be like.
Yeah.
Yeah. The interesting thing is, I don't think, like, I live in an area where there are many, many Asian restaurants around here. And I don't think I've ever actually tasted something as sweet as that orange chicken. It's, like, uniquely a Panda Express thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. They can't match the sweetness. It's probably so much.
Yeah, and I think it speaks to a greater function of American society refusing to accept the not so tasty or not so pretty parts of cultures, right? American education system, for instance, will show you only what they want to see as part of the curriculum, right? There's no actual diversity or true representation of different cultures and different ways of living.
Going back to your concept of tasty, I think the taste of every different person is unique. Though what I think is happening is that restaurants have come to learn what people like to taste or like what tastes they like and don't like. And so they modify the food so that it appeals more to their palate.
Yeah, it's like everything in America from the textbooks to the restaurants to entertainment is tailored to kind of a white, almost male, heteronormative experience. So yeah, I agree with what you guys are saying.
Yeah, and you bring up a good point about entertainment, because a lot of that we see in current media today, for instance, with K-pop and stuff like that, right? As far as imported entertainment to America or, you know, more accepted Asian entertainment in America. So I wanted to know what you guys' thoughts are on stuff like that.
Just really fast, does anyone watch anime out of you guys? Since we're on entertainment?
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. How about like K-pop? Do any of you guys listen to that?
Not that much, no, but some of my friends do.
Yeah, I have some friends that are pretty into it too. But Twitter is a pretty good means or outlet for seeing all of that stuff. Are you guys on Twitter often?
Not so much recently, but yeah, a lot of fan cams, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and with K-pop, just taking that as an example, in the timeline for so many people, right? And a lot of people are either know about K-pop or are into it, right? And within that, there's also the concept of what the men and women look like in those videos, right? Because that's also debated or talked about, because you look at these men, for instance, and they don't look like the Western ideal of men, right? As far as a greater exposure to K-pop in American culture, that's brought about a lot of conversations about how men and women are, or Asian American men and women are portrayed in American culture.
I mean, I would say as an Asian American woman, it's like I feel the fetishization sometimes, especially because like I grew up in like a predominantly white area. And I mean, have you guys ever heard of like the term like yellow fever?
Yes.
Yeah, so, like, it was kind of, like, a running joke, like, when I was growing up in school that, like, a lot of the guys in my school had, like, yellow fever because sometimes they would specifically date girls that are Asian, like, just because they're Asian and they're really into Asian women. And it was the same thing people would say about, I guess, like, the teachers and stuff at school, you know, like, all of their wives, like, happened to be Asian and they were really into, like, specifically Asian women. And it made me, like, uncomfortable, like, at so many instances, because it's, like, you know, I feel like a lot of times with the stereotype of Asian woman is that they're passive and they're submissive and all those type of things, but, yeah.
Oh, yeah. What also makes me uncomfortable is that there are also people on the other side of the equation. There are also Asians who date specifically white people because they are dominant, because they have all these things that they consider manly.
Oh, for sure. I think it's
quite unhealthy.
Yeah. There's been, like, a lot of research done. Like, I think, in the past, I've read kind of, like, different, like, research cases and study on this type of, like, subject, but how a lot of times people, I guess, like, out of all the racial groups in America, they view Asian men as more feminine and less attractive because of that. And, like, yeah, like what you said, there's a lot of Asian women that specifically date white men because, you know, they view them as more manly, or they view them, you know, as being able to give them access to, like, a better life.
Those are also really good points. And a lot, like, in pop culture, I feel like Asian women have been represented as being, like, hypersexualized versions of themselves, specifically through, like, anime and such. Of course, anime originates in Japan, but as of late, it's been increasing in popularity even in America. And I think along with that comes this, like, sexualization of these women and kind of, like, an unrealistic beauty standard for young Asian American girls, and then also, like, a false idea for, like, white America.
Yeah, like, for instance, with skin color, that's a big part, right? Where you're told by parents, elders, and media to keep your skin white. Don't go outside too much, you know. Make sure you don't get too tanned or anything like that, because that's seen as undesirable.
Mm-hmm. And then those who do get tanned tend to undergo through plastic surgery to make their skin whiter, to remove any blemishes, like beauty marks on themselves. I think we see that very kind of prevalent in Korea, especially with the societal standards being placed on physical appearances.
And it's ironic because a lot of light-skinned people go out and get spray tans, you know, or go tan their skin. And
mm-hmm. yeah.
And then we have, like, people of lighter skin tones. It's like everybody's ashamed of their skin and nobody's comfortable being themselves. So I feel like, you know, the solution really starts from the ground up, you know, like exposing our mm-hmm. children to different cultures, different ideas, showcasing different foods, like just having that kind of atmosphere of acceptance from the beginning.
You make, like, such a good point. Like, I mean, like, yeah, I'm, like, Asian American, and, like, my sister, I mean, we both grew up in, like, Southern California our whole lives, and, you know, when you think of, like, people in Southern California, you think of, like, them as, like, having a nice glow, like, a nice tan, and she always uses, like, fake tanning, like, products, you know, to get, right. like, a darker mm-hmm. skin tone, and my mom is always, like, you know, like, why are you doing that? Like, it's so much better if you're paler. So it's, like, that clash. It's, like, the American, like, culture and, like, Asian culture, and I find that so interesting, the differences between them. But at the same time, it's like I feel like, you know, we should promote everyone just loving their skin tone, like, naturally the way it is. But have you guys, like, ever seen those, like, a lot of times in my neighborhood there's, like, those Asian moms that walk around and they're covered, like, they have, like, gloves, like, covering their arms, and, like, they're wearing hats, so they're, like, covered, like, fully covered from the sun on the stroll. But it's because they want to maintain, like, their really pale skin. Like, have you guys ever seen those?
I've yeah. also seen some with umbrellas.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yes, parasols, yeah.
No, I just had, like, an epiphany right now. Like, that makes so much sense.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, I used to ask my mom, like, why does she have an umbrella? It's not raining.
Yeah, that's really prevalent among older generations, right? Like, you don't expect or see, like, a young Asian American woman doing that these days. It's not very prevalent.
For sure. I think it's definitely more of, like, an older generation thing, especially because, you know, when they were, like, in the mainland, you know, that was, like, a really, really big common thing. But I think with the younger generations, especially, like, with girls that I know, it's like they really want, like, a Southern California tan, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so exactly. It's interesting.
It is, I think, also kind of evidence that, like, everybody has been to some degree assimilated into this American culture.
Yeah, for sure.
Let's say this for ourselves.
It's yeah, interesting too. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just agreeing with him. Like, it's like I feel like it also just goes back to, like, you don't realize that you're, like, it assimilating, because sometimes it's not a choice; it's kind of forced upon you.
Exactly. Yeah, and even this American culture that we're you know, supposedly assimilating to, like, doesn't really exist if you think about it, because like everybody here is an immigrant, you know, so like there's no real white culture that we're assimilating to. It's all really just made up in our heads, you know, and culture to begin with is kind of a figment of imagination, but like this even more so, I feel like.
Yeah, there's a lot of hoops immigrants have to jump through as far as social constructs that we have to adhere to, or it's so hard to break out. Yeah. For instance, like if an Asian American kid isn't doing well in school, they're the outlier and they can fall through the cracks very easily.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like Asian American kids, correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like Asian American kids are kind of expected to pick themselves up in school. Like, yes. Because they're kind of seen as like being maybe academically superior to most, like they're not really given the extra resources or help.
Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely a big part of school. Yeah.
For sure. And I even think like by their parents too. It's like their parents just kind of like, even if you're struggling, it's like, oh, just like, you know, like you need to figure it out on your own, or just like study 10 times harder to get it right.
I feel like that kind of also goes back to my point earlier, is that like a lot of times it probably, I'm just assuming at this point, but like I'm assuming that teachers probably see like an Asian student like, oh, he's kind of struggling, like, you know, he'll pick himself up, or like, oh, when he goes home, he'll have help. But it's like, you don't realize like maybe his parents don't speak English and they can't help him. Like I said earlier, like you really don't know, and like you can't really make judgments or
That gets internalized, right? When it's like, oh, if you're an Asian American student, it's not normal for you to seek out counseling or help or like things that will help you, but you're just socially and culturally programmed to not, because it's met with disapproval within the community, right? There's one of our readings said that Asian Americans as a demographic really don't rely on social services, right? And it's not by choice. Asian Americans are humans, you know, everyone struggles and everyone needs to get picked up, but a lot of that is just that internalized stereotype.
Yeah, I think one thing that I think contributes greatly to that is the fact that many Asian cultures are more societal in nature rather than more individualistic. So we tend to, Asian cultures, people in Asian cultures tend to conform to society, working to benefit society as a whole rather than bettering ourselves.
Yeah, I would agree. I think like Asian culture and even like other races outside of, you know, being white, I think a lot of them are mostly collectivistic rather than individualistic. And I feel like, I don't know about you guys, but that's something that I hear my parents complain about a lot, especially my dad. He's always like, I don't understand why America is so individualistic. Mm-hmm. Because in an individualistic society, it makes everything so much more, I guess in a sense, like competitive. Or it's like, you kind of like, everyone's out to get you, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's the word I was thinking of as well. Though I think with a collective society, it places more emphasis, like more expectations on every individual person, kind of like saying, if you're not contributing to society, you're not doing well enough. So I think that's why like a lot of Asian Americans tend to attempt or at least try to pick themselves up rather than seek help, so that they can like fulfill this expectation to contribute to society.
So I found this article interesting because it talked about a Chinese American police officer that worked for NYPD, right? So he was in an alley and there was a lot of commotion in the alley, so he accidentally fired his gun and the bullet ricocheted off the wall and killed an African-American man. This was really interesting because the Chinese-American officer fled the scene rather than like administer CPR or anything to the victim. And this led to like a lot of riots and stuff because he was of course caught and he was being prosecuted and they were deciding what to do with him. And I feel like there's an issue with a lot of different groups of people of color. Like when the spotlight isn't on them, they kind of wipe their hands of the situation. So for example, with the Black Lives Matter movement, a lot of Asian Americans or Mexican Americans kind of turned a blind eye to it. It's like, oh, like the spotlight isn't on us. So like, let's stay out of it and let's stay out of the harmful eye of white America. So what happened in this case was a lot of Asian Americans were protesting for the Chinese officer not to be prosecuted. But then a lot of African Americans were protesting against them, saying like one of our community was like murdered in cold blood. So I feel like there's like a huge like disconnect and rift amongst people of color, because no one wants to be singled out by like white racist America. Everyone would rather have like the one around them be the one that's singled out. It's kind of like a, if you're running from a tiger, you just got to be faster than the people around you mentality. You know, like no one really wants to stand up for their brother or sister in this case.
That makes sense. Yeah, I agree with that. And I've also noticed in general that whites, especially the news outlets, especially who are usually casted by white reporters, tend to use their language to downplay incidents of murders by whites on school massacres, right, like Sandy Hook or school shootings, or white officers killing people of color. And you'll hear this difference when they start talking about the same things, except for people of color are the white killers, like in this example you've mentioned.
Yeah, exactly.
To me, this, it promotes this idea of keeping the whites in this higher position and out of the spotlight, and just blowing up anything that doesn't involve them to make everyone else look like the bad guy.
Yeah, I feel like it really boils down to like, no one wants to be the one that like is the bad guy in a sense, or is the one that's being blamed for any issue or scapegoated. Like, I feel like change should start at the youngest possible age for people. Like, we should condition future generations to like see each other as like united members of the same family rather than belonging to different groups or different religions or races. What do you think about that?
The issue with that is that different areas have different problems to consider when trying to implement this idea, such as in poor communities, you need funding in order to actually like get schools and teachers who know what they're doing and aren't biased by their society or their own upbringing, especially in places like the Deep South, where the majority of the population is still white, and that and their community still harbors these racist ideas and beliefs.
Wait, may I ask a question?
Yeah.
So wait, Enzo, were you saying how like stop or like end racism to teach kids that like they're all part of the same race, like the human race? Is that what you were saying?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I definitely recognize that like it's a lot easier to be said than done. Mm-hmm. But I feel like that's definitely like a start, you know, like implementing that kind of like mentality from the beginning.
Oh, for sure. I completely agree. Because I feel like racism is something that is taught. It's not just something that like you're inherently like racist when you're born. I definitely think that people learn it from like adults and other like authoritative figures in their life when they're a kid. So definitely like starting as a child, like we should be teaching kids that we have more similarities than differences.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Like, I think we should be teaching kids about us having more similarities and differences, because even if kids aren't told, hey, like they're different from us and, you know, all that, like even ignoring it or turning a blind eye to it, which is what happened in my case, I was never told anything that made me feel like everyone was the same as me or that I was different. I feel like that's also like bad, because silence is violence, you know, like if you kind of ignore the problem, it's going to perpetuate it. It's kind of the same as adding fuel to it.
Yes, exactly. Like, I think rather than ignoring it or dismissing it, actively working towards that and like discussing it would be more effective, especially when talking about and creating solutions to these type of problems. Otherwise, yeah, we just perpetuate it and it continues on as it has continued on for generations and like for hundreds of years. Does anybody else have anything to add?
Well, it was really great hearing all of your ideas, guys. And I really feel like, you know, having this podcast and being in this class gave us a much broader perspective of, you know, the problems faced by Asian Americans and people of color as a whole. So I want to thank you guys for having this time with me and making this podcast. And I really enjoyed it.
Adding on to what Enzo said, thank you so much for like sharing your guys' ideas and your opinions. And I definitely think it helps with like the discourse of Asian Americans. And just like it recognizes like how much progress we have made, but how much more progress there is to make.
And going off of what Audrey just said, thank you guys for giving me an insight. I really didn't know much about the Asian American experience, but I've definitely learned through the course and with talking with you guys about your own personal experiences. So thank you for that.
Yeah, it's been really, really helpful seeing all these different perspectives and how we come from different backgrounds, but we can talk about so many things we find in common. And that's really, really helpful to me. So thank you.
Definitely. I've only had mainly had my perspective, and since I'm in a more Asian community, I haven't really heard of many other non-Asian perspectives on this issue. But listening to all this and speaking out my own opinions definitely helped me learn more about how everybody else sees this issue.